Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. You've tuned in to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY with your Thursday morning co-hosts, Jim and Jack. I'm Jack with the cold. That's Jim across from me. And I haven't seen you in a couple weeks, Jim.
No, you had a cold last week, and, and the wise man that you are and were, you stayed away from the microphones and the different things here that we all touch, and boy, we appreciate it immensely.
I'm glad to have done
it. And you still sound a little bit on the mend, though.
I'm getting over it. I sound much worse than I feel.
Get over it, buddy.
Yeah, right. Cry me a river. So here I am, and we also have in studio with us this morning, we'll be in conversation after the weather with two members of the cast and one member of the crew of the upcoming Unknown Locals performance of Walden, The Ballad of Thoreau, which will be an exciting thing to talk about, I say, Jim. But first, we should talk about the weather and also maybe a little bit about what you've been up to these days.
I can handle that.
Yeah.
Do weather first.
Okay. Today, light snow, and it is about to get started. Now until 12 o'clock p.m. today, that's noon, for the next 3 to 4 hours, there is a winter weather advisory in effect. A wintry mix, and then rain this afternoon. Chances of precipitation is 100%, and it hadn't started as I was cruising into the studio, but it looked like it was just about to come down. The sky looked awfully low.
When I walked from the parking lot where I parked my car over to here, it was spitting a little.
Yeah. It's just about to get started. Snow showers this morning, possibly mixed with freezing rain before 10 a.m., and then rain this afternoon. High near 39 degrees. Northeast wind 6 to 11 miles an hour, becoming light in the afternoon. Tonight, rain likely and patchy fog with a low down to 35 degrees. Friday, chance of rain, only 30%, and patchy fog tomorrow with a high about 40. Slight chance of rain on Friday night. On Veterans Day, that's Saturday, the high is 38 degrees.
Heat wave.
Yeah.
Tropical heat wave.
A chance of drizzle on Saturday.
I love drizzle.
Yeah. I like drizzle, and I like the wintry mix.
It looks winter outside. I went over to the bridge to grab a cup of coffee with the glass windows there, and I looked out, and yes, the season is upon us.
It sounds like this is from the National Weather Service. They are providing us the forecast of wintry mix today, but it sounds like something you'd buy at the, it'd be right next to the eggnog or something.
Hot chocolate.
The wintry mix.
Absolutely.
Slight chance of rain on Sunday, and then a chance of rain Sunday night. So kind of a drizzly, gray kind of a weekend. I'd rather have snow myself than rain.
Football-watching weather.
Yes, it certainly is. Your football days are over, Jim, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, my career as a place kicker has gone with the wind. Mm-hmm. I had knee surgery on Tuesday. In August, I squatted down to pick up some plums, and my right knee spoke to me in a way that I could understand it. And so I have a torn meniscus, but it has been repaired. And I just want to give a big shout-out to the folks at Bonner General Health over there, the surgical services, from the reception person ushering me in to the doctors, the anesthesiologist, and all the support staff over there. They were wonderful. And I'm on the mend.
Good.
But no kicking the football this weekend.
And I didn't see any crutches or anything coming in?
I have to admit that, we all hear about knee surgery and how often wonderful, that the worst thing about it has been the wrap. I feel like I can't bend my knee the whole way, and I can't feel anything down there. And maybe I had a fake surgery. Anyway, and I haven't taken any opioids. So I've avoided the epidemic.
Yes.
I feel wonderful. But enough about me. Let's talk about, I want to talk about Thoreau.
Yes. And you are kind of the resident expert on Thoreau.
I wouldn't go that far. But why don't you reintroduce once more everyone who's with us and why they are here, what's going to take place on the 17th and 18th.
From right to left on your radio dial, we have the co-producer and director of the upcoming performance, Maddie Elliott.
Good morning.
Good morning, Maddie. And then we have Mike Clark, who plays Thoreau in this adaptation.
Yep, that's me. Nice to see you again, Jack.
Good to see you, Mike. And Nicole Barrado is Rachel Stewers.
Good morning, everybody.
And Rachel Stewers is a fictional character, yes?
Yeah, she's completely fictional. Kind of the idea is that she's supposed to be almost like another foil for Thoreau to kind of challenge his ideas.
Mm-hmm. So what is the name of the play is Walden, The Ballad of Thoreau.
Yes.
And it's at the Heartwood Center mm-hmm. on the 17th and 18th.
Yes.
And what's the premise here?
So the premise is takes place with Henry David Thoreau in his last 2 days at Walden Pond. He's been there for a couple of years. 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days, we find out in the play. And so it's kind of him coming to terms with, you know, the time that he has spent there. And it's kind of the commencement of that and then him going on to, you know, whatever it is that comes next in his life and the works that he does from there and stuff. And Emerson is in there, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who's played by Seneca Cummings. And then we have another fictional character named Joshua Bennett, who is another, I don't know about foil, but he's an employee of Thoreau's father. And he also, you know, adds some humor. He's one of those people that like is funny, but doesn't know that he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some humor in there and there's some challenging ideas. And, you know, it's Thoreau's sort of, I don't know, his challenges or his kind of coming to terms with what he's doing and his writing.
This is 1850-something?
No, 1847?
40-something.
49?
No, well, he goes to Walden Pond on July 4th, 1845, and he departs it in September 1847.
47.
Okay.
This is me, Jim Healy. Still a PhD, but American transcendentalist. But what it's setting it in context, I think, is crucial because he has just finished 2 years of... Simplify. Right. And while there, he worked on a book, The Week on the Concord Merrimack Rivers, about a trip expedition he took with his now-deceased brother, but back in 1839. And while at Walden, he also has the experience of being arrested for not paying his taxes. And the result of that is civil disobedience, a work that influences Gandhi and Martin Luther King. But where the play takes place is his last 2 days, and this was on Emerson's property,
The
cabin. And so, and Emerson sees Thoreau as a pupil, as somebody who's learning from what Emerson preached or wrote about self-reliance and the rugged individualism. But Thoreau goes his own way and to Emerson's. But I haven't read the play, but it's two acts, isn't it?
It is. It's two acts. So the first act is his 2 years, 2 months, and 1 day, and then the second act is his last day there.
Did he know? Is there a drama behind it? Did he know he was going to be leaving? Did he?
No.
Mm-hmm. I would say that. The whole reason that this play could be considered a drama in a certain way is because he didn't expect to be leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't something that was on his mind. As I've read the play and as I've kind of gotten to know him, I honestly think even though he was having kind of an internal battle with himself and trying to figure out the best way to tell people his ideas and his opinions, that he had kind of slipped into this easy place where he was comfortable and happy.
Unchallenged,
yeah, would be another way of saying it. And so I don't think he would have, I mean, maybe eventually would have left, but he definitely wasn't thinking about it until the moment when Emerson, his friend and his teacher, shows up and starts trying to pull him out of his little world so he can share what he had learned and what he had written in those 2 years, in isolation, in the cabin, in the woods.
There is the Emerson was also departing, I think, on a tour of Europe with his ideas. And he invited Thoreau to come in and stay with his wife, Lydia, and help maintain the place and the children while he was gone. And I think that was another historical urging. But I think you're right in terms of Thoreau was there by himself. And maybe that's where you come in, Rachel, as a way to challenge him in ways that he has not been challenged. I mean, it's easy to live in your own world with your own ideas and create them. And
Yeah, I'd say that's kind of that's definitely correct. I feel like Rachel Stewart is in the play for two reasons. One is another person to challenge his ideas, because the only people he's seen really for the last 2 years has been Ralph Waldo Emerson, his friend, and then Joshua, his kind of friend and caretaker. And I come in as kind of an employee to kind of help, as they call it, shutter the cabin. But I also kind of have my own ideas, having read his work and having my own take on it. And I'm the one person from the outside world that he's really had a conversation with over the last 2 years that hasn't been his two friends, that hasn't been somebody that's kind of constantly challenging him for the sake of challenging to get him to defend his ideas. I'm there just as a person who's got my own opinions and maybe something that Emerson hasn't thrown at him yet. And then kind of the second thing, too, is that I'm the only woman he's seen for over 2 years, which, you know, obviously you have to come see the play to see the reaction. It's kind of hard to describe, but I'd say those two things are kind of the wrench in his gears, you know, having somebody else from the outside going, well, okay, I agree with this, I don't agree with this. And then being the opposite sex, I imagine would be kind of astounding to see after over 2 years.
She's a really fun character too, because in 1847, you know, a woman with her own thoughts and opinions is rather a novel thing. And so that's another fun dynamic.
When I would work with Thoreau in the classroom, I was fascinated by how women readers responded to his works, because he's white, European, male descendant. And how does he work with, how does it resonate with women over the years? You know, that'd be something that I always love to, you know, what are you hearing from him that works for you?
Well, I mean, overall, it's I haven't read a lot of his work, unfortunately. I've read a little bit, but mostly just kind of what I'm getting from the play is I don't really feel like a lot of his work is man or woman specific. And mm-hmm. if it is, mm-hmm. it's not on purpose. He seems to speak really generally about like people. Obviously, back in 1847, it would probably mean mostly men. You know, they're the ones going out, building things, making the money, progressing, I guess, is one of the big things of the play. But especially nowadays, and with, you know, the women's rights movement, it resonates with everybody. Like, at this point, everybody can follow what Thoreau is teaching, because it is so, like, broad when it comes to who he's targeting. It doesn't really feel like he's trying to go, well, you men should do this, you women should do this. He's just going, no, people, live simply, you know. So that's what I like about Thoreau.
In the time period of this play, he was not a well-known figure, is that right?
No. Or,
yeah, he's not a celebrity. He's not. There's not people waiting for his next book.
No, I don't think that he really gained a lot of popularity until after his death, because he died, 14 years, I think, after he left?
He dies at the age of 44. That on about 1861, 18. He was the oddity in town. You know, at this point in American history, towns are usually small, and they know all the personalities, and he was seen as sort of like the odd one.
Yes.
And who could go about. What's your relationship, Mike, with Thoreau, the character that you're portraying?
Well, you know, one of his sayings was one of my favorite when I was a really young kid. I was one of those oddball kids that loved to like play with toys and Transformers and stuff, obviously. But I also enjoyed watching relatively rather deep intellectual adult movies. Like some of my favorite movies were Shine, Les Miserables, and one of them was Dead Poets Society.
Robin Williams.
Yeah. And one of the times when this group of the Dead Poets is inside their cave in the woods, they spit out one of Thoreau's lines. I came to the woods because I wished to live deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a kid, I was like, oh man, this is really cool. I like that. And then so when I auditioned for this play and I got cast as Thoreau, I looked more into it. And as I was reading the lines, I'm like, this is the man that wrote that line. I was like, wow, okay. So I looked more and more into him. And as I'm reading more about him, I'm coming to understand that me and him resonate in a lot of similar ways, because I'm very much like on agreement with like Tolkien, where like I believe the Industrial Revolution, you know, was obviously a positive thing because it makes the world a better place in a lot of ways, but also a terrible thing because it removes us from nature. You know, you see people who are more interested about the property value of a piece of land because of what they can build on and not what because it has. You know, I see them tear trees down to build buildings, and it makes me sad because that tree has been alive longer than you have, and it does something for the world. And I wouldn't consider myself a Greenpeace tree hugger or anything like that. And the word is speaking where people use it so negatively, but I do believe that nature in a lot of ways is very important. And to see a land of, as Emerson's or Thoreau says, a land of smokestacks and warehouses, it just looks so sad and empty, whereas a forest looks so alive. And so when I dove into this play and this is what Thoreau was talking about, I'm like, I totally get what this man is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like it makes sense to me. It resonates. But then on the other end, Emerson comes in and he's like, but what about progress? What are we going to do? We can't just stay stagnant. And I guess that's the dilemma we are in as a society, even today. There's a lot of discussion about it in the news and in the politics. And he wrote about it 100+ years ago, and we're still talking about it.
Well, he's been, along with Emerson, two of the more influential, along with Whitman in terms of the Transcendental Movement. If you ever get a chance, read the eulogy that Emerson gives at Thoreau's funeral. And the tragedy of the eulogy is that he misses Thoreau. He doesn't understand Thoreau. He wanted Thoreau to become a leader of men, you know, with his ideas. But he wasn't a social theorist. He wasn't a political activist. He wanted to be a leader of Huckleberry parties, as he says in Civil Disobedience. And Emerson never, I don't think, ever understood that about him. We're here with... Do you want to do the fill-ins? Why these folks are here? These Thoreauvians are here?
Thoreauvians?
That's what we call them, Thoreauvians.
These Thoreauvians?
Don't ask me to spell it.
These Thoreauvian thespians are here. We've got Maddie Elliott, who is behind the scenes, co-producer and director of the upcoming performance of Walden, The Ballad of Thoreau, at the Heartwood Center next weekend. And we've also got in studio Thoreau himself, played by Mike Clark, and Rachel Stewers, who is a fictional character, played by Nicole Barrado. You are listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. And should we take a musical break? Is it too early?
I'd like to start with Maddie, and maybe we can pick up after the musical break. I would like to talk about the staging, the production, and then I'd like to ask Mike how... Does he have certain spots that he has to be on the stage, or is it just sort of like as he moves about, and where does Rachel come in? Things like that. Do you want to talk about the staging and that thing after musical break?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. The musical break is 60 years ago. We've already done that song. Jailhouse Rock was the number one song in 1957. Then we did the 50-year one with Lulu to Sir With Love. That's still up there. So I thought, what was taking place in the number one song 55 years ago today? And I found a little interesting tidbit about it. It was the Crystals with He's a Rebel. And let's play it, and then I'll open your eyes about He's a Rebel. A very interesting backstory to it.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting KRFY.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
He's a Rebel by The Crystals, the number one song, 55 years to go today on November the 9th, 1962. And the big thing about this is that the song was written by Gene Pitney, the man who sang 24 Hours from Tulsa and Only Love Can Break Your Heart and Town Without Pity. He wrote the song, and Phil Spector wanted the Crystals to record it, but the Crystals were out on tour. And so they couldn't get into a studio, and word was out that Vicky Carr was going to release a debut album with this song, He's a Rebel, on it. So Phil Spector got a West Coast group, girl group, headed by Darlene Love, and they were called The Blossoms. And they sang it. And meanwhile, Crystals are out on the road, but they released it underneath the Crystals' name. They said, oh, look, we have a hit, and we didn't even sing it. So you have the Crystals getting credit for a song that the Blossoms sang and became a number one song.
I don't know. I mean, Darlene Love was famous for that. What's the Christmas song? Christmas, they're singing Deck the Halls, but it's not like Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Merry Christmas Baby or whatever
Merry Christmas
called.
Baby, very bluesy. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, where were all the lawyers back in those days? Uh-huh. You know, in terms of, you know, it was how loosely things were done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day. But anyway, yeah. That's a little backstory to The Blossoms / The Crystals. He's a Rebel.
Yeah. We're here in the studio with Maddie Elliott, Nicole Barrado, and Mike Clark from the Unknown Locals upcoming performance of Walden, The Ballad of Thoreau, at the Heartwood Center on the 17th and 18th of this month.
And where are tickets available?
Tickets are available. Let me see here. We have tickets at Eves Leaves, Winter Ridge, iCarts, the POAC office, and artandsandpoint.org. So we are collaborating with POAC, the Pondere Arts Council, for this play, mm-hmm. which is really exciting.
And tickets at the door as well?
At the door as well, yes.
The door is at 6:30, and the play begins at 7 o'clock p.m. That's a week hence, not this Friday, Saturday, but the 17th and 18th at the Heartwood Center.
And it's one weekend only, so everybody needs to make sure that they get their tickets.
The reason why I'm saying boo is I'm not going to be here.
It's very sad.
Yeah, I'm sad because I love Thoreau.
Well, I can tell you're a very big fan, and it's really passionate mm-hmm. thing for you, which is really exciting for us doing the show. It's kind of part of the idea.
How's POAC involved?
So
did they come to you, or you?
They
went
did. Yeah, they had decided that, you know, they do a lot with visual artists and music artists and stuff like that, but they haven't really done much with theater and stuff, and so they wanted to kind of get involved with that and find a way to support local theater people such as ourselves, and so they actually reached out to Michael Bigley and Ben Olson, and both of them directed them to Chris and I, and Chris basically told them they needed to talk to me because I was the one who did everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, at first I wasn't sure. I was like, well, do they just want like some advice and some guidelines? And then they asked me to direct it and kind of help them through the production process and stuff.
I'd like to know, what is it like to, let's say you do a play with Chris and you have total freedom about what to do. Here, this has a specific script.
Yes.
And does it have stage directions?
Some. It does. The thing about this play is written by a gentleman named Michael Jonathan.
Okay.
And there is notes in there about, you know, the actors having the freedom to move freely and mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. you know, do a lot of their own blocking and stuff like that. Like, we do have to adhere pretty closely as much as we can to the dialogue. But it does give a lot of freedom because, you know, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau are both orators.
Mm-hmm.
They're very expressive and expansive.
Right.
And so we wanted to give them the freedom to kind of move as they were feeling their lines and kind of in the moment and stuff like that. And so the stage direction, you know, there is some guidelines. There's some things where it's like, okay, at point X, you have to have, you know, these mm-hmm. three things happen mm-hmm. or something like that to drive the story forward or to make you know, to emphasize certain things. But right, for the most part, it's pretty free. And then like set pieces, you know, you have to have certain things to like show the cabin.
Oh, I was going to ask you, is it pretty definite about the things that you need to have?
There are certain items that are mentioned in the script that we, you know, have had to track down. And one of the challenges with doing a period play is finding things that are antique or, you know, that look like they would be in place in an 1847 cabin. And so that's been a fun challenge to kind of track things down and stuff like that. But as far as, you know, I mean, his cabin obviously is very sparse. He strips everything down to the essentials and lives very simply. And so, you know, it's a bed and a fireplace and a table and, you know, a candle and things like that. So there's not a whole lot of things. There's basically just what is mentioned in the set that they kind of use to, you know, illustrate what they're doing at the time or to move the story forward and stuff like that.
And there's four characters. There's Thoreau and Emerson and two fictional, Joshua Barnett and Rachel Stewart.
Yes.
And how was it to, I'm going to go with you, Rachel, first, and then I'll ask Mike, to work with this script in terms of, did you feel restricted by the script, or do you feel that you can take it in a certain direction that you want to go with it?
I think that for Rachel, anyways, there is kind of a, she is kind of meant to accomplish something. And in order to do that, she did kind of have certain parameters. You know, she couldn't be too playful. You know, she couldn't be too kind of demure. She couldn't be too she couldn't be too
assertive.
There's a certain assertiveness. Kind of the description of Rachel Stewart is she has kind of almost an air of feminism before it's a thing. So she's not a straight up what do they call them? No, I'm not going to say that. one of the women's rights movements, say the very enthusiastic women's rights movements. Characters. She's more, I think she kind of follows more the lines like, hey, I'm a person, treat me like a person, kind of what we were talking about with Thoreau, not being too man or woman oriented. She's like, no, I have an opinion, and regardless of, you know, my gender or my employment, I have these ideas and I have the right to express my opinions if I am asked to. But of course, she is a woman in 1847. So she does have a sense of a kind of a demureness, but it's not very well. It is, let's say, it's very thinly veiling an air of assertiveness there.
She tries to be appropriate and have like propriety and stuff like that, but she finds it to be a challenge at times, given the conversations of the men around her.
yes, indeed, yeah.
Actually, to be honest, I haven't told you this, but I find her to be a little bit like Belle from Beauty and the Beast. Very well read, very opinionated. Probably the town might have seen her as a little blunt and misbehaving of the time, but I'm sure it would have been an intellectual breath of fresh air for Thoreau to bounce his ideas off of.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what she was there to do is Emerson was there to poke and prod and poke and prod and push Emerson or push Thoreau as far as he could go to defend his ideas. Rachel was more just like, well, I've read your ideas, and rather than poking and prodding to get you to defend them, this is what I think. Like, this is my opinion, which is something that Emerson kind of does, but not in a way to stimulate a conversation, more in a way to stimulate a defense, whereas Rachel is there to kind of be like, okay, I've read your ideas. I think you're wrong here, but I think you're right here. And it kind of forces Thoreau to be like, wait, what? Like, this is what I'm going to have to do. This is how I'm going to develop more of what I'm trying to express.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, are you in both acts?
I'm not. So I actually come in on the 2-year, 2-month, and 2-day mark. I am an employee of his father, who runs a pencil shop in town.
That's right.
Yep. And mm-hmm. I come in with Joshua, and it's a bit of a surprise. You know, like we mentioned before, Henry has only seen two people for the most part over the last 2 years. And not only is there a new person in his life, but it's the opposite gender. And so I think for both things, he's kind of like, oh, a new person and a woman. Oh, my gosh.
Well, people might ask, why are we celebrating Thoreau? Well, this is the 200th anniversary of his birth date. He was born in 1817. And so he even got a postage stamp. You know, beautiful. One of the keynotes of being on a postage stamp here in the United States is that you have to be dead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I guess I'm interested in, and this might be where fiction and reality are different. And we could ask Jim and also the cast for the reality and the fiction. But when he left here, were his ideas pretty much intact and just needed to be assembled to put his notes together and publish them? Or was there, did he evolve after he took off? When he left, was there still was it still cooking?
Me and one of the fellow cast members, Seneca Cummings, who plays Ralph Waldo Emerson, were talking about this the other day, just, you know, hashing out what our characters' motivations are, how they interact with each other. And one of the sayings that I like to use and I live by, I can't remember who says it, some old philosopher. It's the wise man or the fool makes up his mind slowly and changes it quickly. And the wise man makes up his mind quickly, but changes it slowly. And while discussing this with Seneca, he's like, do you think that would have been how it was? I'm like, well, Thoreau had been out there 2 years hashing out rough draft, revision after revision, constantly changing and thinking and getting to the points where he is at times talking to himself and nature as if there is actually a conversation going on. And to him, probably at that point, there was. And so Thoreau was at this point when Emerson and Joshua and eventually Miss Stewart's come in. He was at a point where he was almost completely positive about his opinion. But he had yet to actually cut his teeth on a debate with the outside world. And that's one of the things Emerson brings up to him is like, what are people going to say to you? How are you going to convince them that you are right and everyone else is wrong? You know, why would somebody not build a shop that will make their family money and instead leave a field? How can you convince somebody to do that? And so when Thoreau eventually leaves, after having his first taste of the outside world in a discussion with Miss Stewart, I believe he is set in a way where he believes what he is doing is true. And he believes it is right. But now, with all this talk of progress and his family uses trees to build pencils and all that stuff, I think he's kind of understanding that progress is something that needs to happen, but he still sees that we are foregoing nature for this progress. So when he left, I believed he was certain that we needed to have more respect and love for our natural world and our connection to nature in and of itself.
He had arrived at it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and he stayed there for mm-hmm. those were the ideas that continued to define him.
And I'm sure he had after his discussion on those last couple mm-hmm. days, I'm sure he maybe had some more questions that he was going to hash out.
Yeah,
you know, that he needed to think about.
Well, one of the interesting things about Walden is that though this is one man's attempt to live deliberately and to observe, he did such things like measuring the thickness of the ice on Walden Pond, or there's one whole classic chunk of a chapter on a battle between two groups of ants that are just fabulous. But throughout all of this, bordering the pond is the railroad tracks, and he can hear this train whistle. And so he can feel the encroaching of, you know, and nothing more in the mid-19th century than the train became the symbol of progress. And he could hear it coming in. And so you're absolutely correct, Mike, in terms of here he is in his own little world, but even there it's being infiltrated by the sounds of, and he can hear workers, you know, working on the railroad, the conversation, the voices. And so he had some real challenges, but I think you hit the nail on the head. He's only concerned that he himself do right. And if he said he was a big abolitionist, abolishing slavery, and the moment one person stands up in Massachusetts and says slavery does not exist, it ceases to exist in Massachusetts. The power of one individual, and you start with yourself. And I think that's what he, you know, if he got another person, he's lucky. You know, but if you get your own house in order first, I think. Do you get that sense across from him in the lines that you have?
You know, to be honest, I could see how that is definitely where he was starting. He wanted to live himself, you know, show himself as an example. But I'm sure that there was an underlying frustration and almost fury, a rage against these people he saw essentially walking around with either dollar signs in their eyes or blindfolds over their eyes. He's like, you don't understand what you were doing. You do understand what you were doing, which is even worse. He's like, why? Why don't you take a chance to come back to what is meant to be in a lot of ways? And so that's how I saw. So not so much, I'll do it my way and you guys do whatever. I think it was, I'm doing it this way. Why don't you see how good this is?
Well, the famous line, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, I mean, one of the things is, you know, I can sit here and go, now, 2 weeks ago, what was I doing or whatever? He could tell you what he was doing from his journals, and he can do it by, you know, what flowers were blooming. They said about Thoreau, you could just drop him anywhere in a Massachusetts woods, and he could guess within about 2 to 3 days the time of the year by what was blooming, what was in vegetation, what wasn't. So talking about how days slip by on us, whereas living deliberately means that you engage in every moment with observation and responding. And I think that, you know, most of us just, where did the summer go?
Yeah.
Where did...
How did it get to be almost Christmas already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just April.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I mean,
we are here talking about a play coming up on the 17th and 18th at the Heartwood Center, The Ballad of Walden.
We're in conversation with Maddie Elliott, the co-producer and director, Nicole Barato, and Mike Clark, who are cast members. And Maddie, are you still, is your job pretty much done at this point?
Not quite. Mm-hmm. We have one more rehearsal this week before we start production week next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be getting all of the set and props and everything into the theater starting on Sunday. And then we will really be, you know, practicing in the space and making everything. It's really when it comes alive is those last few days.
So next week is a busy week for the performance.
It is. We have rehearsal every night to get ready. And we also are doing a daytime performance for students.
Good. Bring that up.
Which is really exciting. One of the things that POAC, you know, obviously they tried to do a lot is to get community involvement, but mm-hmm. definitely, you know, mm-hmm. the education aspect of it and stuff. And I'm really excited about that. So we have a 10 a.m. performance for students.
On what day?
On Friday. Yes. So if there are teachers out there that think that they might want to bring a class, or if there are homeschool students or anything like that, you should contact the POAC office. Can I give their phone number?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So POAC's number is 208-263-6139. And you should definitely contact them if you're interested in that student performance. And then we have the two evening performances at 7 o'clock.
I mean, I can't help but think that this would be just a boon to any school teacher, whether it be an elementary school teacher, junior high, or senior high school.
Right,
I mean, this is a great opportunity.
It is. And it's like we were talking about, like, the reality versus the fiction and stuff. And this play is like, it is all fiction based. Like, it's mm-hmm. not, it's based off of notes and conversations and kind of, there's some historical things that they've blended together to make this story, but it really is kind of like Thoreau being on that cusp.
Well, one of the things I often, you know, all three of you probably can talk to this. You work extremely hard learning your lines, you create the set, you do everything, and then boom, boom, in 2 days, You're done with it and you move on with your lives.
Yeah.
When you come to that Saturday and you want, ooh, I'd like to have another weekend. I mean, are there some plays, Maddie, that you go, gosh, I'm glad I'm done with that one?
You know, I think that there's a mixed feeling with all of them. You know, like you work really hard, like you say, and especially when you do two weekends, and especially like a big play, like when we did Hamlet last year, where it took 6 weeks to build the set and, you know, make costumes and things like that. Like, it's one of those things. It's like you put so much work into it that it's like, oh, it's so fleeting that you actually get to have the experience of the show and you share it with an audience and stuff. But there is a relief, I think, afterward, because it's like, oh, I don't have to have those lines in my head, you know, day after day and stuff like that. But I think every show that you do, it kind of, it stays with you. You know, it kind of lives on and you remember it and it's an experience.
Becomes a part of you.
For me personally, once the first weekend goes down, because we usually do two weekends, a Friday and a Saturday show. Once the first weekend goes down, there's that sense of relief because you're like, well, we did it. You know, you have six to eight weeks of rehearsal and you remember as best you can and you block as best you can. You get everybody in the right place, saying the right words, and you never know until that first show happens. And
even then, sometimes you don't know.
And that it happens. The second weekend goes down and it's usually so much better because the nervousness is gone. We did it once. And either we did it well or we didn't, but we did it
you
once.
You learn from it. You learn what works and what doesn't. But every audience is different.
Every audience is different. And for me, what that has begun to lend to, this is my fourth or fifth play now. Not as many as compared to some people, but I'm finding that even a third weekend sometimes would be nice because at that point you're really getting into your
flow. You're on a roll. You're on a roll.
And not only that, but people are talking about it. You know, they're going, oh, this person, this play, it's funny, it's sad. And, you know, and I find that's easier once the performances get happening because then you're doing like a pickup rehearsal maybe once a week. But then at that point it is just like, whew. And then there is a certain rush getting up on stage and accomplishing what you set out to do, which was not only to memorize lines, but to deliver them in a way that's going to make people laugh, people cry, you know. So for me, I could do performances every weekend as long as the rehearsal time was done.
What you're saying is that that you learn from your previous performance, and that when it's just a Friday and a Saturday, there's no learning curve or as much of a learning curve to get you through, let's say, that you might put in for the next weekend's performance. And I think that would be sort of hard.
It is. Yeah. The first weekend is always nerve-wracking, not just because obviously you've never done the play before, but also I mean, a play is only as good as the people who attend it, the people who watch it.
I was
going
to say, the audience,
yeah,
to play
the
off
audience.
The audience. What,
right.
what right. lines work, what lines don't work. What
exactly.
Do you need?
Yeah. And with every audience being different, you know, night one and night two are going to be two completely different things. And so, you know, since you're already nervous with having 6 weeks of rehearsals and you're like, okay, night one, let's go. Okay, night one went well. And then night two, it's, you know, this line doesn't work. They laugh at this line. You know, it's crickets at this line, and you're just kind of like, oh no, okay.
The performance is the 17th and the 18th at what time?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
And doors open at 6:30.
And one more time, Maddie, where are tickets available? I knew I'd ask you once you turned off your phone. I'm sorry.
Of course. No, it's fine. It's fine.
I know there's some at Eve's Leaves.
Yeah, we have tickets at Eve's Leaves, Winter Ridge.
iCarts,
the POAC office, artinsandpoint.org, and at the door.
And we highly encourage high school, junior high, and elementary school teachers, if you're interested in attending a performance with your students, contact the POAC office by all means, because this is a great opportunity to plug your students into one of the icons, I think, of an American literature.
Yeah.
Thoreau is just so important in so many levels. And thanks to POAC and thanks to the unknown locals, who we know who you are anyway.
Well, you do.
for doing this. And can you break three legs?
Sure, why not?
I think you can maybe do
Let's
four.
Let's do it. Okay,
yeah, okay. Hey, have a great time.
Thank you so much.
And enjoy the performance. I wish I could see it. Maybe you'll go a second weekend. I can come back and catch it the next one. But enjoy. That is at the Heartwood Center, November 17th to Friday, November 18th, a Saturday. Throw the Ballot of Walden. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us. As always, we really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate the hard work that the Unknown Locals and what they bring to the community. We're going to do a song right now. This song will be introduced afterwards. You'll recognize it. This was a song that was released on this date in 1963.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
Louie Louie, we all recognize that song, done by a Portland, Oregon garage band, and it was done in one take, and it was the released on this date in 1963, and it charted up to the number two in the Billboard hits for 6 weeks. And of course, we all know loosely the history of it, that the lead singer, according to history, slurred the words because it was a song that covers up the alleged fact that the lyrics were laced with profanity, graphically depicting sex between a sailor and a lady. And so it was banned. In fact, the state that I grew up in, where I was located, Indiana, it was personally prohibited by Governor Matthew Welch. And then that began a 31-day investigation. No, I take it back. 31-month investigation by the FBI into the song. And they concluded that they were unable to interpret any of the wording in the record. Though, the drummer dropped a drumstick at the 54-second mark, and you could hear the F-bomb.
Whoa.
And, but I guess, you know, that, you know, that he fumbled a drumstick or whatever. And, it's an interesting little history behind an incredibly, it's become part of the iconology.
A 31-day investigation by the FBI.
31-month investigation. Gosh, where our money went during that.
I don't even understand. Like if that happened today, I don't understand how you'd spend 31 months. Investigate.
We have more important things to do. I mean, those were the days when Darlene Love could record a song with the Blossoms.
Yes.
And later on, it becomes the Crystals' big hit.
Boy, the music industry. It's weird, man.
This whole weird. Let's talk about not weird, but wonderful. The things coming up this weekend. I'll begin. This is for Friday, November the 10th, tomorrow. Santa's Workshop Craft Fair. Bonner General Health will host a Santa's Workshop Craft Fair from 9 to 4 p.m. in the BGH classroom next to the cafeteria. You can check out the homemade crafts featuring crochet, quilted items, stocking stuffers, candles, soaps, and much more. Enjoy a glass of complimentary hot chocolate or apple cider. Boy, that would be good today. While you look around, vendor booth fees goes towards supporting food for our children. I think that's wonderful. That's tomorrow, Santa's Workshop Craft Fair, Bonner General Health Hospital, in the classroom next to the cafeteria, 9 to 4.
At the hospital. Okay.
At the hospital.
And they've got hot chocolate and apple cider. You know what I like to do?
Don't tell me you mix them.
I mix them together and I call it a wintry mix. No, I don't really. That's what
I was going to say. Chocolate.
That's gross.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it could actually be good. Who knows?
Somebody has tried it already.
Yeah. I've got some musical events coming up tomorrow. Are you all finished with the daytime stuff? Oh, take a break, Jim.
I mixed the apple cider and the hot chocolate, Jack. I've got one other thing, and then you can do all the music. The annual Harvest Dinner in Hope, Idaho, Memorial Community Center, 415 Wellington Place. The evening begins at 5:30 with a no-host bar, complimentary appetizers, and fun-filled bucket raffles featuring locally crafted and homemade items. And then you get a traditional holiday meal that is served at 4 p.m. You can find out the costs and make reservations at 208-264-5481. And also bring non-perishable food donations that will go to the food bank there. That's in Hope, Idaho, the annual Harvest Dinner.
I've never been to that, but I'd like to go sometime because I like driving out to Hope in all seasons.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you 100%.
Tonight, Andy Hackbarth is at the Panada Theater. Award-winning musician Andy Hackbarth and his band returned to Sandpoint as part of their 2016 Steal You Away tour. Well, it's 2017. What? The concert begins at 7:30 p.m. in the Panada Theater at 300 North 1st Avenue. Tickets are available at Eve's Leaves, iCarts, At the Door, and Panada.org. It's Andy Hackbarth. Look him up. Tomorrow, we've got a little live music going on, as always on Fridays, at the winery, 5 to 8 p.m. with Jake Robin. Come in and enjoy this local musician's sultry voice.
Sultry on a winter's day.
Now, does he write his own liner notes, I wonder, or do they pick it for him? I mean, I like that. That's a good description.
Yeah, sultry. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, somehow when I think of sultry vocals, I think of, who do I think of? Julie London or someone like that. Mm-hmm. Sultry. We just don't use that word much anymore, do we?
No.
You know, like Adele is a sultry singer.
That's, yeah.
Or Beyonce.
I'd say that. But Jake Robin can, why not?
Why not, Jake? It's your language, too.
Marty and Doug are playing at the Wine Bar. That's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the Cedar Street Bridge, the Cedar Street Bistro Wine Bar, 334 North 1st Avenue. It's Second Fridays with Ron Green at McDuff's Beer Hall, 220 Cedar Street. It's 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. He's up from Coeur d'Alene. He's been dynamic musical presence as a professional musician and solo artist in the Inland Northwest, spending the last decade performing throughout the Northwest. As a soloist, Green's intimate stage presence has gained him a reputation as a passionate singer. There's another good one. Passionate.
Well, no.
He's a passionate
intimate,
singer.
Intimate, passionate, yeah. Sultry.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about music?
We are.
Okay,
we
good,
are.
Good. Just want to make sure.
Jim, we
okay.
are.
Okay.
Free and open to the public. 21 years of age only because it is at McDuff's Beer Hall. Let's see. There's music at the Idaho Poor Authority, Bright Moments Jazz. That's on the 10th. That's tomorrow. And there is a contra dance at in the New England tradition down at Sandpoint Community Hall. That's at 7 p.m. at 204 South 1st Avenue. All dances are taught and called with live music. Beginners and singles are welcome. If you are a new dancer, you are encouraged to arrive in a timely manner for the beginning to start with the basics. Bring clean shoes and a water bottle. And Sandpoint Parks and Rec and Lost Horse Press present that. It's I think they do that on the second Friday. Yep, the second Friday of every month. Call 263-6751 for more information about the Sandpoint Contra Dance. It'll be a good way to work up a sweat in now that it's, you know, rainy wintertime.
Absolutely.
Boy, we're just about out of
time. We're running out of time. Go to Sandpoint Online to find out. Real quickly, I want to say that on Saturday, Holiday Farmers Market, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Forest Bird Charter School at 614 South Madison. A wonderful opportunity to stock up for winter or just get some delicious fresh veggies before they're all gone. That's the Farmers Holiday Market at the Forest Bird Charter School.
And, yeah, well, you already said it, Jim. Stay tuned for Bird Note.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jack. I'm not going to be here next week.
Oh, that's right.
I've got a Notre Dame Navy game to go. That's if the Irish beat Miami on Saturday.
Well, what if it? Okay.
Whoa.
I hope they do.
My fingers are crossed.
Yes. Good luck to you, Jim. I'll be back with, there's more morning shows all next week. And please do tune in. Here's Bird Note, and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.